Also, J.C. Treader and the NFLPA, we'll get into that. You know, he's going to resign. There's all kinds of stuff going on with...
That union keeps getting in the way of things, doesn't it?
You know, it's just funny. We have this conversation. I know I'm being really nitpicky on this. I don't look at an association of millionaires as a union.
They do.
But are they really? They're a players' association. A union, to me, strives to make sure that plumbers, electricians, sheet metal workers, pipe fitters, laborers, have healthy working conditions and are able to make money enough to, you know, to feed their families. When we have associations of millionaires, there are players' associations.
Most of them aren't, Andy. They're young guys trying to scrape out a career, make some money, and then go on to work in their life's work.
All right. Well, you want to have the ultimate conversation? I'll give you this, right? If the NFLPA, let's just say someone went on strike at the stadium, one of these unions decided to go, would the Players Association honor that or not?
You'd have
honor
to ask them.
Honor the picket line?
I think no.
No way. But as they did when they had holdouts and they were going to bring in non-union players at one point, they sure asked the building trades here in Northeast Ohio to honor that when that was going on here before. To me, I look at the Association of Millionaires that are playing sports for the most part and compare them to folks that are, you know, coming in and making sure that you have water in your house. I think there's a difference there. So, but anyway, that's just me and I'm being on my little soapbox there.
They call themselves
a
union and
they really
union dues and everything else.
Yeah, I don't really think they're a union. They are a union. Sure, I guess.
I'm sure by the legal definition of the word union, they are a union.
It's obvious things are currently messy for the union. That's what Mike Florio said. All right, I'll give it to you. He's a lawyer, but I think it's a much different world, but that's okay. All right, so let's talk a little bit about NFL training camp as we get set here for what's about to happen with training camp. First of all, what are you looking forward to in the Browns training camp, Jeff?
I'm sorry. I'm really looking forward to watching the quarterback battle.
Oh, that's unique. I
forgive me. I'm also waiting to see if anybody on the offense can step up and help at the skill positions. Jerry Jeudy is, just because Jerry Jeudy is the best wide receiver the Browns have, doesn't make him, you know, like top 10 in the NFL, because I think Jerry is very competent and very good. But, you know, it's not like he's going to make anybody forget Justin Jefferson, despite the initials being the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see somebody else step up. I like Cedric Tillman a lot. I hope Deontay Johnson can find it again. He was very good when he was in Pittsburgh, and I don't know what happened. I don't know if he knows what happened, but hopefully he can get it together. So that would be huge. I wonder if Harold Fanning can become a real weapon. I hope so. I think it would be a real nice plus for the team. And I want to see Dylan Sampson, if you want to know the truth. If Quinshon Judkins can't be there for whatever reason, I want to see what Dylan Sampson can do.
It's going to be interesting with Dylan Sampson and Jerome Ford. And now I think Pierre Strong probably has a much better
chance of hanging onto a job.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always liked Pierre. And it's the chicken and the egg. I've always thought that he deserved more carries. Well, if they thought he did, he'd get them. So maybe he's not showing enough to show that he deserves more carries, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What would he do with more carries? Maybe nothing. Because they don't give them to him. But I think he has some ability, and I would love to see what he can do.
I mean, obviously, I've talked about this before, too, what I was looking forward to. I want to see Harold Fannin Jr. Just beyond the quarterbacks. Everyone wants to see the quarterbacks. I'm right there. I'm in line with you. I want to see what happens. I think Dylan Sampson was in line for carries anyway, whether Quinshon Judkins was here. And I thought, you know, you're looking at I think we're all hoping you got a Mack and Biner feeling there with Sampson and Judkins, but we're not going to see that early on. So, and
you know, everybody's talking about Sampson being the change of pace guy, you know, like the prototypical third down type of back.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's the right use of him. You know, I wonder if it's not a better situation if they go Detroit and alternate series, you know, with like Gibbs and David Montgomery. I wonder if Sampson is that kind of a player more so than being the third down guy who comes in and catches passes. He showed in college that he can really run the football.
Yeah,
and he runs it between the tackles.
He didn't get the chance to do it in the game we all wanted to see him do it in, though. That's the problem for Sampson. You know, if he doesn't pull his hamstring against Vandy, then we're not talking about. I still want. Is he going to be okay? Is he healthy? I mean, I just want to see what he looks like in a game. I understand, you know, he's been here for rookie camp. I understand he's been here all week, but. And I think Sampson's going to have an unbelievable opportunity to make himself the feature back early on in the season. I don't think there's any question. You know, they drafted him. He was outstanding college running back. I'm still bummed that he just, you know, he wasn't himself against Ohio State there, and then didn't even play in the second half in that game. So,
you know, he does have a great opportunity, Andy.
Yeah.
I mean, he can – but when Judkins is able to take the football field, he's going to get every opportunity.
I think so,
but Sampson
too.
Has a chance, I think, while Judkins is out, to establish the type of role, and I keep referring to what they have in Detroit, I think he has a chance to establish that kind of a role where maybe you alternate series with guys and, you know, hey, this series, I'm the number one running back. I'm out here the whole time, as they do in Detroit with Jahmyr Gibbs and David
Montgomery. Don't you feel like he's the number one running back now, though?
No, Ford is.
It's gonna be that'll be a battle that plays out then during the preseason, because he's now has the opportunity to try to win that if he can take it away from Jerome. Again, it goes back to maybe a little bit of the same philosophy you would use with the quarterbacks. Who do you trust? You know, Kevin knows exactly what he's getting in Jerome Ford. He's had the opportunity since he's been here.
And Jerome has been certainly competent, and so I don't have any qualms if Jerome Ford is out there on the
field. And I give Jerome Ford credit for redoing his contract to say, yeah, I do want to be a part of this. I want to stick around. And it may not be exactly what he wanted, but he's got a home.
Okay. Yeah,
there's a little bit of loyalty there. I know loyalty doesn't matter, but
I think
it does matter.
Honestly, Andy, I don't mean to poo-poo what you said on this, but
yes, you do.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Great. To me, in what Jerome Ford did doesn't mean I want to be a Cleveland Brown. It means I want to guarantee as much money as I can. If you guys cut me, and because they would have had he not, you know, redone his deal, I don't know that I'm going to get that somewhere else. So I'll take it, and then I'll hopefully work my you-know-what off and get out of here next year and make more money.
Could have tested the waters, though. He could have left.
Well, he could have, except, you know, guaranteed money is guaranteed money, pal.
I'm with you. So, again, if prioritizing beyond the quarterbacks, it's Njoku and Fannin. I want to see what they look like with a two tight end set for the Browns. DeJuan Jones now obviously has the chance to solidify everything that we've ever wanted for him at left tackle. I want to see how healthy the offensive line is, and I want to see how much better they are than a year ago. It is interesting to hear people talk about how the coaching change on that offensive line, and Andy Dickerson's taken a ton of heat for the way that offensive line performed. Plus, you've got Zach Zinter and Luke Whipler just kind of knocking on the door to see if they're going to be the future on the offensive line. So I think that's another place where it's not like those guys aren't going to play during the regular season, but it's still going to be another opportunity for them to solidify their future with the team. Especially, I mean, Whipler was a 6th-round pick. Zinter was a 3rd-round pick. So, and, you know, Zinter's been here since 24. Defensively, is there a battle that's kind of, you know, our defensive backs are pretty much set. So,
no, you know what I want to see though, Andy. I'm excited about Mason Graham in the middle of that defensive line.
Yeah, I am too. I am too.
And I think he could be huge. You know, this regime, and I think they've done a pretty solid job of it. I think this regime based itself at defensive tackle for the most part on signing veteran free agents. We've seen a number of them over the years, different guys. Shelby Harris, you know, Dalvin Tomlinson, now Malik Collins. And I think they've done a pretty good job with that. I really do. They've filled those holes well. But the last 2 years, they've invested in that position with young guys. Mike Hall, and now this year, Mason Graham. And I hope Mike Hall is healthy enough to get on the football field and then is able to keep himself on the football field by not getting into trouble. And if you can put Hall and Graham together and they're as good as we think they're going to be, I thought Michael Hall played well when he was out there last year. That could get really, really good. And that could just turn Myles Garrett loose like crazy. So I'm anxious to see Mason Graham. I also think Carson Schlesinger has to come in and be good, because without JOK in the linebacking core, you're going to need good play at the linebacker spots and all the spots. So no matter where they line Schlesinger up, he's going to have to be good, I think, because you know, if we ever see JOK on the football field again, Andy, I'm beginning to be, the thought is I'd be surprised. You know, it's serious, serious injury. So the top two picks have to be good.
And we're going to bring in Mike Fleurer here in a second. I'm still haunted, maybe because I just did an interview last night on this. The 4.5, 5.5 win. Did I mention who it was?
No, but I did an interview last night on a Sunday. My opinion was so necessary, they had to call me on the weekend.
You know, it's crazy because other people do shows on the weekend, Jeff. Not all of us can work, 4 days a week. So, although I've been doing a good job of that lately. People do shows on Sundays, and I'm happy to help.
5 days a week. I don't know what you're talking about.
People do shows on the weekends. If someone called you and said you'd do an interview on the weekend, you wouldn't do it because it's the weekend?
No days off.
There you go.
That's what I think.
Is that what you tell them?
No days off.
Depends on who it is.
You're too good for some shows. Is that what you're saying?
It's somebody I know. And I can help them out, sure.
What if it's somebody you don't know? What if it's CBS Sports? I'm just saying, they happen to call you and say, Jeff, we need someone to talk about the Browns. Is there any chance you could hop on our show?
Well, I've done it before, so I'd probably do it again. But
on the weekends?
If I'm sitting on my butt and not doing anything else, yeah.
Wow. Anyway, Adam.
It was Adam Kaufman.
It was a guy who's done our show before.
Ding!
And he's a really nice guy. It was in Boston for a long time.
Well, that's
Boston.
Nice.
All right, anyway.
I don't have a need to flap my gums incessantly.
It's not about flapping my gums. It's about being able to make sure we get people to flap their gums on our show. That's why I do it. So I just want you to
know. You're the best.
I just want you to know
just
that.
Just ask you.
Yeah, you just ask yourself, my friend.
A little bit of news, gentlemen. Mike Brown speaking to the media today, the owner of the Cincinnati Bengals, on the Trey Hendrickson potential deal. Quote,
I'm trading him to the Browns. No?
I think I'll get it done.
Of course you will. You will.
I think it'll get done.
Mike Florio next, Baskin and Phelps. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. Rookies are here. Veterans are starting to trickle in, and we are getting set for the start of the NFL season. So many things going on. There's a lot of stuff going on with the NFLPA. Former Browns offensive lineman J.C. Treader resigning. And so now they're looking for an interim executive director, and you know, all on the heels of some collusion stuff going on, and there is no better guy to talk to. You see him nationally on TV all the time, and when you want to know what's going on in the NFL, you just simply go to Pro Football Talk, and Mike Florio is there with everything you need to know, and right now he is on the Fan Hotline. Mike, how are you, my friend? Thank you for joining us today.
Hey, doing great. How are you guys?
Hi, Mike.
We're good. Hey, before we get into the football stuff, tell me about Big Shield. You got another book. How do you do this, man? You're writing like 15 articles a day on Pro Football Talk, and then you're squeezing in another book. What's Big Shield about?
Big Shield is a story of gambling, the mob, and professional football, but not the National Football League. My lawyers have required me, i.e. me, to emphasize at every turn the teams depicted in Big Shield are not NFL teams. And if you want to think they are, I can't stop you. But, you know, there's a team in Baltimore. There's a team involved in Las Vegas. There's a team in Minneapolis. There are a few teams that come up in the course of Big Shield. But it all flows from a concern I've had as it relates to the NFL and the controversies that could undermine the best interests of the league, the integrity of the sport, et cetera. And inside information has been something fascinating to me because there's so much of it and so many people have it. And what could, under the wrong set of circumstances, someone do to profit from making inside information available to mobsters who are trying to rig the bets in their favor either before games, you know, the stuff we've always suspected, someone is telling someone else who's truly injured, what's the game plan going to be, who's going to get the ball, etc. But in this age of real-time in-game betting, what if you had someone on the sideline who was given a signal before the play to somebody who might be watching through a real-time connection? And this thing is set in the not-too-distant future where everything is real-time, so you pull up your streaming app and you're seeing it as it's happening. What if there's somebody who's managed to get in the shot right behind the coach of the many different camera angles that you can pick as you're watching the game, and you've got a steady cam on the coach, and you can see a guy standing back there who's grabbing his helmet and letting go of his face mask if it's a run, or putting his hand on his face mask and leaving it there if it's a pass? How hard would that be to put something like that together? And then you've got people out there who watch it and they act on it. And that's just the premise for the story that unfolds between three main characters who initially the connections aren't clear, but as you get deeper into it, it becomes more clear how they interconnect. And it just kind of goes from there. But, you know, the NFL will probably hate the story because it makes pro football look corrupt. I think at a deeper level, they should love it because it brings to life what could happen if they're not vigilant about it. And it shows the consequences to a player who would decide to try to make some easy money by providing inside information to somebody who takes it and then bets with it.
I'm just having flashbacks. ESPN show was a Playmakers. Remember that? Yeah. They weren't real happy about that.
No, they hated that. They made them shut it down. They were an NFL broadcast partner, and they made them shut it down. But this isn't an NBC book. This is a Just Me book. And if they want to squeeze NBC to fire me, I can't stop them from doing it. It probably wouldn't be the first time they've tried.
My guess is if you need a gig, you can call our guys, and we'll get you in.
Well,
if they happen to.
Yeah, if you're bored, you're always welcome in Cleveland. How's that sound?
Here's the thing about the website that I founded 25 years ago next November. I own 100% of the equity.
Yes.
So if NBC ever kicks me to the curb, I'll pack up the bus and drive it somewhere else.
Well, if they do, it's their mistake. We know that.
Yeah. And they've been we're kind of having fun here. Mm-hmm. They have put up with a lot by way of, you know, complaints that come either from the league, from other media companies, because, you know, they don't like it when their people get called out for not doing their jobs the way that I think they should. They have played defense and run interference for me very well for 16 years, so I've got no complaints. I admire and respect them. The cowardly thing to do would be to just cut me loose, and they've never even considered that.
Well, you do awesome. A great job for them, and we absolutely love the website. The NFL Players Association has a mess going on here. And J.C. Treader, the former Brown, apparently the latest situation that's come up there. What's the future of the NFLPA, Mike? And do you think it's ever done a good job for its workforce?
Well, the question isn't whether or not the people in leadership have done a good job for the workforce. The question is whether the workforce cares enough to empower leadership to do a good job. And one of the basic realities of the NFL Players Association, as it relates to the mindset of its members, there's a gross imbalance in willingness to use the nuclear option. The owners would shut the sport down for a season if they had to get what they want. The players will not miss a game. They will not miss a game check. And we blindly line up behind the oligarchs. They're the ones who would take football away from us for a year. The players will never take football away from us. Now, they went on strike in 1982 and again in 1987, but 1987 is when it became obvious that it doesn't work. Work stoppages don't work for players. They've only got so many years to play. They want to play. They don't want to give that up. And they'll do the best deal they can to allow themselves to do the thing they love. They love the sport enough to not shut it down. The owners will shut it down in order to get better terms in the next CBA. And I think people need to understand that and maybe have a little more sympathy or empathy, whichever the right word is there, for the players, because the players tend to get screwed. And what's happened is the league has weaponized the fact that the players won't go on strike and that the players generally are disengaged and they don't really care. They've weaponized that against them for the past 15 years, dating back to the 2011 CBA. And I think more recently, the NFLPA non-player leadership has taken advantage of, and maybe some of the player leaders have taken advantage of the fact that the rank and file just doesn't care, and we can do whatever we want to do. So a lot of the chaos happening now dates back to the hiring process for Lloyd Howell. He was very secretive. The players didn't even know who the candidates were. The players who voted on the candidates didn't find out who they were until they showed up for the meeting. There was a lot of stuff about that that was wrong, and is evidenced by everything that's happened over the past 6 weeks and how it's all fallen apart, probably not the best way to go to cloak everything in secrecy.
Mike, we're playing Wheel of Quarterback here in Cleveland. We have four or five, if you really want to look at it, but we really have four quarterbacks that could be starting when the season starts. Who is your money on?
I think it's going to be Joe Flacco until whichever of the two rookies is more ready to go. And, you know, unless the Browns start winning and winning and winning and winning, and there's no reason to pivot away from Flacco, I still think Kenny Pickett will be the odd man out. I don't think you can take four guys to camp. Now, it looks like he's going to make it to camp, but this is what happens when you separate winning from management of assets and leverage for future draft picks, and we're going to play this game, this chief strategy officer game from Paul DePodesta about, you know, and it goes back to the 2017-2018 time frame when they prioritized carrying over cap space and maximizing draft picks and not winning. Like, a winning program does not draft two quarterbacks in rounds 3 and 5. A program that is committed to winning picks its quarterback and moves on and doesn't, well, this is an asset for us. So forget about that. You're trying to win football games. You're trying to create an atmosphere where you can win football games. So taking four quarterbacks to camp, four that are competing for the starting job, not just, you know, three in a camp arm, I think that's a mistake. Taking four into the regular season, which they reportedly are serious about doing, that's a mistake. Taking four past the trade deadline, that's a mistake. It's less about winning, and it's more about, oh, we really want to get the most we can for that one guy that we otherwise would cut.
Mike Florio joining us from Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports. Quinshon Judkins looked like the guy who is going to get the chance to be the Nick Chubb replacement and maybe even play that big of a role on this team. And now he's not under contract. He has legal issues. He's sitting out. I would assume, I think we're all assuming, there's a suspension on the way from the NFL. Mike, how big of a suspension is that going to be? And how much trouble do you think this young guy's in right now?
Well, it's a two-step process beyond the pending legal situation. You've got the suspension that will be imposed once the criminal case is over. Then you've got the very real possibility of paid leave. And for him to consciously not sign his contract and not show up, and it's unrelated to how much is going to be guaranteed, he's focusing on the legal case, it makes sense, because if he does show up with a signed contract, there's a very good chance they're going to do to him what they did to Mike Hall last year and say, you're on the paid leave list until we're in a position to resolve this once and for all. And the circumstances put pressure on Judkins to plead guilty to something, to accept whatever punishment the criminal justice system is going to give him, and then accept whatever punishment the NFL proposes, and not do the whole Sue Robinson, Deshaun Watson, full-blown hearing that takes weeks to unfold. Just do a deal with the league the way Justin Tucker did. He did a deal with the league, and it was done. So Judkins needs to resolve his criminal case. He needs to work out a deal with the league, and then he'll know how many games he's going to miss to start the season, and he'll come back. And I hate to make it that transactional, but look, he did what he did or he didn't do what he did. I don't know. We have a police report, and we have photographic evidence that was given to the authorities that would support a conclusion that he did something he shouldn't have done. Whatever it is, he needs to work it out. And I think if he shows up today and signs a contract, he'll be put on paid leave until he does work it out. So why not just go ahead and get it worked out?
Are the Browns a 5-win team or better, or are they 5 wins and lower?
It's impossible to know, because every team changes throughout the course of the season. Injuries have a huge impact, whether they're injuries that happen to you or injuries that happen to the teams that you play. They're good enough to be a better than 5-win team. They're good enough to be a playoff team. It's just a lot of things that have to fall into place. And right now we don't know. That's part of the fun. We have no idea what's going to happen with any team. Now, I mean, the problem is, despite this age of parity that we now occupy, there's a small handful of teams that we suspect are going to be standing as the dust settles. So the Browns aren't one of those teams that we look at and say, oh, well, they'll definitely be there. But you can play your way into it. You know, just like they say you can play your way into primetime, you can play your way in to high-level contention. And, you know, the Bengals in 2021, I thought there was no chance they'd make the playoffs, and they almost won the Super Bowl. The Texans 2 years ago, I would assume there's no way. I would have sworn, I would have bet, and I don't bet, and this is one of the reasons why you shouldn't bet. No way they make the playoffs, and they won the division. So it's not crazy. But when you look at the competition, you look at the other teams, you look at the division, you look at the quarterback situation with the Bengals, the Ravens, and the Steelers, yeah, I mean, it's all adding up to the Browns being last place. And they're going to need a lot of luck and a lot of bad breaks for those other teams, which are good breaks for them if they're not going to be the fourth place team in the AFC North.
Mike, what do you think of Nick Chubb in Houston? Joe Mixon's there. They got an interesting young team. Do you think Nick gets an opportunity to show he's healthy, or is he going to be a backup to Joe Mixon?
I think he'll get a chance to play and contribute. You know, for running backs, if you're anything lower than second on the depth chart, they expect you to play special teams. And they're not going to expect Nick Chubb to play special teams. So he's in there to be, you know, 1-2 punch with Joe Mixon. And it's also a kind of a lower risk proposition. And you know, you bring in a guy who hasn't done a whole lot of winning. I always say with Super Bowl champions, there's value in bringing in a veteran who's never won a Super Bowl, who will kind of keep you from getting complacent and will want to get his own championship. I guess this is kind of a lower level idea. You've got a guy who's rarely been on a competitive team. Now with a team that's a consistent division winner, I mean, this really may draw a lot out of Nick Chubb, and he's missed so much time after that horrible knee injury. I saw it happen live. I'm amazed he ever came back. And it's a low-risk, high-reward move for the Texans.
Mike, I want to ask you another one of this. We've kind of haven't really touched on this today, so I just want to ask you this because I think you'll have a better feel for it. Is there any way Washington, D.C. doesn't get a new stadium if they don't change the name back?
Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
Look, they may not get a new stadium if they would change the name back in D.C. The right. D.C. Council has been dragging their feet, and now the window's open for both Maryland and Virginia to come to the table with their offers. The president, and I saw this coming. The moment that there was a suggestion that the team might go to the president to try to get D.C. Council to approve the deal that's already in place, I thought, boy, what's going to happen if he says change the name as a condition to him helping out? So at the end of the day, if they have to choose between keeping the name or getting a stadium at the site of RFK and being back in D.C., you know, deep down, and this is something they're never going to admit, they may want to change the name. And they may want to be able to say, we only did it because we had to. We only did it because we had to do it to get our stadium. Because they flirt with it. They dance right up to the line. They introduced uniforms that match the uniforms from the 80s. And when they unveiled those a couple of weeks ago, the old logo was all over the videos. And the way they took the photographs of the players, they had their heads turned in a way where you couldn't see the W on the side. So it looked just like the old uniforms. I feel like they do things from time to time. They're just kind of testing the waters for an eventual change back to the original name. And if you got the commander-in-chief saying to the Commanders, you must change your name back or you don't get your new stadium, they may say, oh boy, that's a shame we have to do it, and deep down be thinking, yeah, we wanted to do it. Thank you, President, for giving us the cover to do what we wanted to do.
It's an interesting. I thought it was also interesting in the article on Pro Football Talk that you said the Guardians, you know, stood up to President Trump on that too. That's I was like, oh, that's interesting, because I think there are, you know, obviously that's a hot topic here too in Cleveland too.
Commanders are hiding under the bed, and look, between the two names, I don't think Indians needs to change. I think the reason that the old Washington name had to go is language had evolved to the point where it was and is a dictionary defined slur. Indians isn't. Blackhawks isn't. The other teams out there with Native American-based names, it's not something that you look at it and say, that's probably not a word we should be using. That's the only team that's got that connotation as it relates to Native American names and imagery. And I didn't even have a problem with the logo. It was the name. It just got to a point where it's like, in this day and age, you know, there's all sorts of words that we could say and get fired for right now that
right.
you would have said 30, 40, 50 years ago, and it wouldn't have been a problem. Language changes. We evolve. And that word ended up being just a victim of the natural evolution of the language. So it's that simple. And but hey, if the Indians want to be the Guardians, that's their prerogative. And I respect them for saying, thanks, President, but we're good, especially when the Commanders are hiding under the bed hoping this all goes away.
All right, Mike, thank you. Tell me one more time, Big Shield, how can we get it?
Big Shield is out August 19. I have stuck to my New Year's resolution that all of the e-books that I sell, all of the e-book novels are 99 cents on Amazon. Print version's $14.99. So you can pre-order it now, and it'll show up, boom, on the 19th. You may even forget about it by the 19th. So just pre-order it now, 99 cents. There's nothing you can find for 99 cents. And as I say, if you read it and hate it, I'll give you your 99 cents. I'll make it an even dollar. I'll send you a $1 bill, but you have to convince me you read it, and there will be a test to convince, and I alone decide whether you actually read it. There is no Cliff Notes version to read.
It's all about that penny.
That's awesome.
Mike, thank you. Good luck with the book. We will be talking to you soon. Thank you,
Michael.
That's kind of where we sit as far as the Browns are concerned. I'm looking forward to next week. I think we're out there for at least one day. For camp Friday, I think, is the first day that fans can go out there. So that should be exciting for you, too. I enjoy. I mean, it's so you can see the transition that's happening out there in Berea, too, for anyone that's ever been out there for camp and all the land that the Browns have acquired on the other side of the street. And you can see how big that complex is going to be when it's all said and done. I'll be honest with you, as far as the Browns facility, which, you know, let's face it, for us as fans, we just kind of drive by and we're like, oh, that's where the Browns practice. Well, that facility is about to become so much more than, and I'm not talking about the dome. I'm talking about the practice facility. And I'm like truly and genuinely excited to see what they do with that stadium that they're building there on the Browns cross country mortgage campus, to see what they do there, because, you know, that's going to be an opportunity. I believe that Berea Mid Park is moving over there. The Titans are going to start playing their home games on that Browns site. And you would think that you'd get to see some more high school football games on that site too. And the Browns have been just gigantic proponents of girls flag football. And obviously we all saw that last week that is going to be a state sanctioned sport. Jeff.
And with that, congratulations to the city of Brook Park.
Yes.
New home of the High School Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I just saw Bernie was wearing his
relocating, and they're going to build
jacket.
A facility out there and everything else. So they've got some things going on.
It was in Canton though before too, so it's
correct.
That's kind of a little bit of a bummer for the folks in Canton.
Good for Mayor Ed Orcott and his staff.
Yeah,
congratulations.
So does that? I didn't catch it, and help me, correct me if I'm wrong. Is that new High School Hall of Fame you're looking at me? If you don't know the answer, just say I don't know the answer. It's okay. Is that going to be a part of the new dome?
I don't know that.
Projects,
but they're supposed to build a new facility for it.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool. I don't know that. I mean, off the top,
it's a great place. You know, Northeast Ohio is a great place to have a high school football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if you. I was trying to think of high school football Hall of Famers. I think it's tough to judge. How do you judge a high school football Hall of Famer?
Put Derrick Henry in and call it a day.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, if someone said to you, "Who's the best high school football player you've ever seen?"
Oh boy,
it's a tough one. There are two things that I'll always remember: Robert Smith playing that first national.
Robert was really good
playing that first nationally televised game, which was on Sports Channel America at the time, which eventually would become what Fox Sports Ohio and somewhere down the road a lot. And I do believe that like I remember going, wow, they're showing a high school game nationally on a Friday night. I just thought it might have actually been a Saturday night. I can't remember if it was a Friday or Saturday, because for a long time, the state wouldn't let you televise games on Friday night live. But between that and Andy Katzenmoyer, to me, to watch him play at Westerville South, I've never, ever, ever seen a high school athlete dominate a game the way he did. Oh, although I will tell you, Bo Jackson looked pretty good the last couple of years watching him play around town here. And he's going to look great for Ohio State coming up, too. So just to kind of go through a couple of eras of football. So very good for them as well. Going back to what Mike Florio said and kind of double down on what I was saying there, Jeff, that if you're Kevin Stefanski, that Flacco's probably going to be your starting quarterback week one, whether you like it or not. He kind of alluded to the same things that I was saying.
Well, I disagree with both of you.
Well, that's okay. You know, you can always be wrong. It's okay.
It's not that I don't think that will happen. My thought is I don't want it to happen. I just think it's a short-term Band-Aid. I'm looking for more of a possible long-term quarterback. That's it. I'm hoping they can possibly find a long-term guy this year. And it could end up being Dylan Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders, and that would fit with your scenario and what Mike said. You start with Flacco, and then when the rookie is ready, whichever one it is, you put him in there. But I think the guy that might have the best opportunity to be the long-term answer is Pickett.
Did you? I thought it was interesting. He thought that Pickett wouldn't be here when camp started.
Yes, he did.
I don't think there are going to be four quarterbacks on this roster when it starts.
I do.
And I don't think, I think it's against the grade.
I think there will be when training camp starts.
And yeah, no, when training camp starts, yeah. Yes, agree with that.
Through the preseason, yeah. I think there certainly will be. And I wonder if longer than that.
So one of two things is going to happen. And I'm not wishing this on anybody, trust me. One of the Browns quarterbacks gets injured and isn't 100% and won't be ready for the regular season.
Well, Andy, that's the easy solution to the problem.
Well, and maybe that's why you're better off having four here right now anyway. Or
why do I see Rodney Dangerfield? Oh, my arm!
You, with the golf shoes on. Come in and putt for me. Or there's going to be a team that is desperate for a number two. And when I mean desperate, I mean desperate.
Yeah, but see, if the Browns think that one of the veterans can play, I'm hard pressed to think why would you trade him?
Well, because you're saying you think that one of the veterans can play and you want to hang on to the two young guys. You don't need both. You really only need one. Some teams only carry two quarterbacks.
Yeah, except for one thing. If you want a chance to win this year and you don't deem either one of your rookies ready to take the football field anytime soon, I think you need both of those veterans. Otherwise, if the rookies aren't ready, and by the way, I still think Dylan Gabriel is going to show that he is. So we'll stay tuned on that.
Sounds like they're going to give him the opportunity.
Sure,
that's
does.
For sure.
Yeah.
And by the way he was drafted, he is in line to get that opportunity. So I think that's something that is definitely in line. So in fact, when we talk about the line, what is it? Give us your Browns quarterback power rankings going into camp. You rank them 1, 2, 3, 4. You tell us, are we nuts? Are we right? Are we wrong? Or how do you want to see this thing play out? Maybe it isn't 4. Maybe it's 3. Maybe it's only 2. But the options are there with a team with 5 quarterbacks that's on it and 4 are active to be able to play here in the preseason. So give us your QB power rankings for the Browns. We're going to do that next. 216-474-0092. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan.